Hey, g'day there, fellow humans. Mark Lebusque here for another episode of the Simply Practically Human podcast. My guest today I met in 2014 at the Harvard Kennedy School of Business in Cambridge, just out of Boston. That's me dropping a name. I actually got to go to Harvard University, which doesn't make me clever, but just means I went to Harvard University. Barb was based over in California, and she has an amazing book that she's written called 101 Ways to Lose a Great Employee. She's going to talk about that. She's going to talk about why she's into the work that she's in, and leave you with the most simple and practical tips I've ever heard on 180-odd podcasts. So have a listen, take some notes, and we'll catch you at the end.
Life can get pretty complicated. In the Simply Practically Human podcast, Mark Lebusque talks to incredible humans to see the way forward more clearly through the complexity in the world and in our heads. Let's get ready to thrive.
Hey, I'm delighted today to be joined all the way from the US by author, org development practitioner, and a human being who cares deeply about people, Barb Otis. Barb, thanks for joining me.
So happy to be here, Mark. Been a long time coming.
It has been a long time coming. We are going to have some fun. We met way back in 2014, and this is where I start the podcast because I'm always intrigued by people's first impressions of me, and I also like to share my first impressions of them. So you get to go first because you're the guest. Your first impressions of Mark Lebusque.
Well, I met you at the Harvard Kennedy program in Boston. And I think you were sitting in the row in front of me and a little off to the right. And my first impression was the very first day that we all came together. And a gentleman by the name of Marty Linsky walked into the room. He sat his briefcase down. He didn't say a word to any of us. After a few minutes, he got up and he left the room. We all sat there. Nobody knew what to do. Was he coming back? Should we move? Do we leave? Is somebody else coming back in the room? And I think you were one of the first people saying, maybe we're supposed to make a decision and do something. And I was so impressed by that because you weren't afraid to speak up. Everybody was silent. Nobody knew what to do. So I looked at you immediately like, he's a risk taker and he's willing to step in when situations are difficult or challenging and be the first one to speak up. So it was quite memorable for me.
There you go. And shout out to the great man, Marty Linsky. He's been on the podcast and he's my leadership. I say this all the time. People will get sick of it. He is my leadership superhero. He's that little thing that he did that day and also the things he did over the 8 days, as well as others that were up the room facilitating were really helpful, I think, for all of us to understand that we were all in leadership and we shouldn't have been waiting for them as the, let's call them the leaders, to lead the way. Thank you for your kind words. Now, for me and you, this is my first impressions. And it was interesting because my first impressions, it was like you were really respectful. You were a little...
I've changed.
Oh, shit. Okay. You were a little sort of quiet, I reckon, for the first couple of days. But what happened... I think there was a moment where you shared something that was there was a bit of vulnerability that was shared. And I think my sense was then you were like, I'm in here now. And then it went to, I then saw cheeky Barb with a great sense of humor. And that was what really, I think, drew me towards you. But even over a short period of time, my first impression was, well, she's a little quiet and reserved. But then it was like, she's bloody funny. And then it just so happened that later that year, my daughter and I were heading over to the US and we got to catch up with you and Pete in San Francisco and spend the afternoon with you, which was, I think it was a really nice way to then see you outside of the room as well. But that was my first impression.
Yeah, that was Zoe, right?
Zoe is now 24 and she's a nurse. So she works in, she just started her first year of nursing, and she's something she said she was going to do when she was about, I think, 6.
Incredible.
She's now doing that. But yes, she had some pretty fond memories. She quite liked it over there. We've sort of kept in touch a bit, but not as much as I'd like. So we're here now. And the big thing for me when we kick off into this podcast, we're going to talk a bit about your book that you wrote, which I love, which is about 101 Ways to Lose a Great Employee. And it's just the humor in that, but I'm going to call it the velvet sledgehammer humor, where it's sort of funny, but it's not funny because it's true. We're going to get into a bit of that and why it's so important to keep great employees and not lose them. But before we go there, we get into the human. And I want the listeners to know more about you. So give us a bit of your backstory, where you grew up, your education, anything that's sort of sent you down this pathway of really, truly caring about people in the workplace.
Yeah, sure. Well, I grew up in a town called Novato, California. It's in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's in Marin County. I still live here. That wasn't my plan, but I married somebody from the East Coast who wasn't ever going back to snow. Matter of fact, he always tells me, you always say you want to go to Australia. Marin County's climate is very similar to Australia, but we are going to make it to Australia one day.
Good.
But so I grew up, and you know, I have two sisters, mom and dad. We are a very close family. My parents instilled in us the value of taking care of one another, and especially our elderly grandparents, and respecting their life experience and knowledge. And so I was very, very close to both sets of grandparents, but particularly my mother's mother. We were very bonded. And she, one day, I never will forget it, talked to me and told me, you know, I see something in you. You have great empathy towards others. And you seem to feel other people's pain and really care. So she always thought I was going to be a nurse. I always thought I was going to be a nurse too, like Zoe. I'm going to be a nurse. You know, every Halloween I was a nurse. That's what I'm going to do. Then I went to, I got my undergraduate degree at a school called Dominican University in San Rafael. And it was in business management because in my family, you know, hey, you get a business degree, you're good to go. You can get a job anywhere. So after my undergraduate degree, I really started thinking, what do I want to do? I mean, this really isn't doing it for me, just having that education, general education. And organizational development work was not really that well known. But I was working at American Express at that time, and they were actually doing OD work before other organizations were really beginning to step into that world. So I had great exposure, and I remember speaking to a counselor, and he said, if you want more finance, get your MBA. If you really care about what happens to people in an organization and human systems, go for an organizational development degree. I took my first class. I fell in love with it, and it's been a passion ever since then. I mean, I really have to say I feel incredibly passionate about the work that I do. And when I say that I do care about people, I really do care. My husband's a marine biologist, and our friends always tease us, Peter's trying to save the world and Barb's trying to save everybody in it. Like, he's trying to save the environment and I'm trying to save all the people. But I think I just passionately care about people a lot. And I've just progressively... I was so fortunate. I got that graduate degree in organizational development, and I went right to work in the field, which a lot of people don't get to do that often, right? You know, they get an advanced degree and they don't get to work in their field, but I really did. So I've had a lot of experience doing this.
I love it. Something that really sticks out. Great. It's a great story, and it gets people to understand you a bit more. Your grandmother.
Yes.
Picking up something in you that you couldn't see. Now, I'm going to also make an assumption here that that gene has been passed on to you, because one of the things that I know about you is that you have an ability to help people see what they can't see. So can you maybe talk a little bit about that as well? Because of the passion for your work, what is it about you that can see things in others that they can't see?
Well, I think, you know, I tell everyone who gets into this field of work, two of your best skills, you have to be really good at this, is observing and listening. I do a lot of that. And so I do not walk into a room or a coaching session feeling like, hey, I got this. I'm the one who carries the knowledge. No, I observe, I listen, I do a lot of that actually before I step in. I just don't step in and say, hey, I've got the solution to your problem. The whole point is getting working with people so they create the solution to the problem. It's not me. We're talking it through, but they're the ones who are coming up with the solution. And so I think it's something that sometimes we have to go slow to go fast. And sometimes I think that's what's missing is that people just want to jump in to get something done, but they really don't want to understand the team that works for them. They don't want to get to know the people that work for them. They don't engage with them. I mean, all of this matters when you're leading a team.
Absolutely, it does. And this whole idea that let's just get the work done. And then I talk about what I call the what's next syndrome. What have we got next? What's coming up? And then and we're all busy and we've got all these stories that we share. And like thinking about the people is so important. So it brings me to your book. And I know when you were over in Boston or in Cambridge, that's when you were talking. And look, what I loved about it too is that you weren't sort of walking around holding your book up saying, here's my book. It was just, you mentioned that you'd done this book and I had a look and I'm like, this is really cool because it's straight to the point. It's like I said, it's the velvet sledgehammer. People would be reading it and they'd be going like this. Oh no, that's not me. But I know someone who does that sort of thing. But what really resonated with me, Barb, was I could see myself in it when I was bad, Mark, but I couldn't see myself in it when I said I was good, Mark. So 101 ways to lose a great employee, which is just like every page, it's like, here's what you do, shut your door or don't talk to people or all that sort of stuff. One of the things that you talk about, which I love, is this isn't just bad intention managers that can do this. Even good intention, well-intentioned managers can piss their employees off. So how does it happen that good intention managers can do this?
Well, look, I did some of those things in the book. You know, I did. My favorite one is actually the 101 about performance punishment in the book. You've got a great employee, right? So you give the work to that great employee because you know they're going to get it done. They do the work correctly. You trust them. But all of a sudden, you're giving all the work to that person and no one else. It's not equitable among the team, right? So for a little while, that person may feel pretty special. Hey, the boss can see that I've got the talent and skills to do this job. But then all of a sudden, you know, it can become a burden. It's almost punitive.
Yep.
They're the ones who are maybe working a little longer, right? Or they're missing their lunch breaks or they're not, you know, they're not getting out of work on time, something like that. And I mean, I have to say that I've had that done to me. I've been on the receiving end of that. And then I know early in my career, leading people, I did that to some people because I trusted them, but I wasn't having the difficult conversations I needed to have with the other people who were slacking.
Yep.
So then I would wonder, I'm losing that great person, but I'm losing them for a reason. I burned them out.
Yeah. The curse of competence comes to mind here for me. The competent people just kept getting loaded up with, as Marty called it, you know, carrying the water of the others. And then at some point in time, and there's, I only ever use research and data when it serves my purpose, but there is research and data that says that like people get the shits on when they get loaded up with all the work and others are allowed to slack off. So I think there'll be people listening to this going, I'm that person. I'm getting loaded up like a pack horse at the moment by my boss. Yeah. And now, so if you're listening to this, go and talk to your boss about it is my recommendation. If you're a boss who's doing this, go and have some challenging conversations with other people who aren't lifting their game. Yeah. So I like that. Hey, great example. And you picked the last one. Did you put your favorite one intentionally at number 101?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I thought you might.
Yes, I did. I did that on purpose, yeah.
There's your cheekiness. There's the cheekiness coming through in you.
Exactly. You know, I did focus groups when I wrote this. I wrote it how Barb would write maybe a strategic organizational development plan. And, you know, it was very professional, very serious. And then someone said, try writing it this way. It's totally not the way I write. And hands down, everybody wanted it the way it is.
Yep.
They said, it's cheeky. It's in your face. It's like, hey, You want to lose somebody? Behave like this. They'll run out the door. This is a great way to get them to leave their employment with you.
Yeah, I remember one gentleman there at Harvard. He bought multiple copies of the book, didn't he? He was so taken by it. Yeah, I remember that. And it's like, because I was thinking about writing a book and I'm like, look at her go. Look at her selling all these books. I want to be like Barb one day when I grow up.
Yeah. And look at you, you did, right?
So you know, talk a bit about that. We go everywhere on this. I let you know that before we came along. I usually write in a certain way, but then people have said to me to write it this way, which is foreign to me. From a leadership perspective, how was your level of comfort in doing that?
I wasn't very comfortable at first, but that side of me, like you've gotten to know me, people who know me that I have a fairly healthy sense of humor. I do. I like to laugh. And I tell my team, if I don't hear laughter at least once a day, something's wrong.
Yep.
You know, it's like, you know, even when things seem to be, quote, falling apart, we still find things to laugh about and get through it. I mean, you have to have levity. Everything can't be so serious every day, all day long. So I think a lot of organizations right now are missing the levity. But I took a risk writing it this way, Mark. The risk was that I wasn't going to be taken seriously. That, oh, this is cheeky. It's not business professional. And yeah, I took a real risk, I thought. Like, oh. And, you know, you put yourself out there and it's for sale on Amazon. And I have a lot of reviews on Amazon. And you put your creativity out and people will give you comments.
People are looking for real stuff, like seriously, because there'll be a couple of 2x2s in there and do this. And if you follow this and everything will be all right. And it's like, well, hang on. First of all, there's a credibility issue there. A lot of these books are written by people that have never managed other people. So I think that what you've done, I love how you've sat with your discomfort because that's leadership.
Yeah.
And you've actually walked your talk. And you know, I've done some of this stuff to people. So I think that's great. Now, this little thing's gone on since, what was it, late 2019, early 2020, little thing turned up called COVID. And it's impacted on all of us, including us folk in Melbourne who had 277 days of hard lockdown.
Yeah.
This is why 101 Ways to Lose a Great Employee is a must read for everybody right now, because you could almost double down on the stuff that's in there. My sense is this. We've run an experiment for 2.5 years on whether we can trust our people when we can't see them. And I think overwhelmingly we know the answer to that. However, some human beings who have got the title manager in their title are still doing all of those things that you said they shouldn't do. What are your thoughts around the impact of COVID on ramping up the ability for shit managers to lose good people?
Yeah. First off, I agree with everything you said. COVID was forced change in our life, right?
Yep.
And it's not that people are 100% resistant to change. We're resistant to change when it's imposed upon us. When it's our idea to change, you know, we may feel a little fear around it, a choice that we're making, but we're okay with it because we're making the choice. It's when external factors come into our life and we're forced to make a change. COVID, we were forced to make a change. And there's a lot of leaders, right, who have come back into the workforce. I think it was Elon Musk who said he wanted everybody back at their desk or they were going to lose their job, right? That's not working. Mm. That type of leadership style is not working. People have got to learn and adapt to the new way of working. What is wrong with having a blended schedule where people can work 50% at home, 50% in the office? Matter of fact, I mean, I think Twitter in San Francisco closed their whole on-site building. They're saving tons of money having 100% workforce that is remote. I think it's really about adapting and listening to your employees. It's almost like, you know, I was talking to somebody and he was a leader in an organization and he goes, I'm the boss. I tell them what to do. They don't tell me what to do. You know, when I say I want them back, they get back in the office. But there was an employee who took a video of the office space when they were told they had to come back for culture reasons. You know, you have to come back in to promote the culture, right? You're not getting to know our culture when you're working individually at home. But when she showed the video, I think this is actually on TikTok. When she showed the video, there was nobody else in the building around her except herself. So how is that impacting the culture?
It's an interesting one, you know, because you could almost write another book called 101 Ways to Bullshit to Your People About Why They Need to Be in the Office. And, and you know, all the things like, and look, I think it should be a blend because I'm big on face-to-face human connection. I still think we need to be in whatever the office is. I don't care, but some space where we come together. Yeah. But, you know, all these ideas of you're not going to pick up the culture and, you know, we're not going to be able to collaborate. They usually use all of these words like collaborate and ideate and co-create. And, like, it's like we can still do that. What have we learned about, like, even Zoom and having remote meetings and all these things? And any manager who's telling people I'm the boss and you'll do what I say, I reckon they've got a bit of a short lifespan here at the moment. So I love how you've shared that example.
I think what is shocking to me is when leaders see themselves so differently than how their teams see them.
Yep.
And it's like, where is that disconnect coming from? Like, how is that disconnect happening? How can this person not feel the energy from these people? I mean, how can they not know?
Well, because they're so caught up in the system that says I'm technically good at what I do, so I'll just hang on to that. They, mm-hmm. You know what the thing is? They'll feel that stuff that's going on. But as Marty says, they'll practice this skillful art of work avoidance and they just won't go there because everyone wants it to be technically, I got promoted because I'm technically good. Now I've got to look after people and I'm not so good. And I reckon that's the great opportunity.
Yeah. Or the other thing that I'm really trying to get people to understand is that when I hear like, oh, well, this person always is arguing with me. No, they're talking. They're trying to share a different perspective and how somebody interprets that as arguing.
Well, see, that's the story, isn't it? So simple and practical tips for people listening here on how do you make sure that you don't lose great employees? So what would three things be, Barb? Because I know you'd have more than three, but what would be the three ones you want to share today?
I know that's really tough because I have so many, but I would say ask. You know, when I go in often to do mediation or coaching between people, the first thing I say, did you ask? Somebody will say, they seem to be upset all the time, or they're upset about this or that. And I said, did you ask them? No, it's like, just ask, you know, ask a question. Okay. I would also say stop the blaming. That's a huge one. People don't like to be blamed. You create a blaming culture. You start to silence your workforce. Nobody's going to come forward for fear of retaliation or if they're publicly shamed, right, for making errors. So that's got to stop immediately. The other thing is, I think when you can engage people in decision-making processes, help them be a part of, making decisions.
You know what? This is called the Simply Practically Human podcast for a reason. Those things are like simple but bloody powerful. Hey, have you ever asked the people why they're upset? Oh, no, I didn't think about that. Or I didn't want to ask them because I didn't want to hear the answer that they were going to say. That's usually what's going on. Right. The blame game. Like how easy is it to turn the mirror outwards rather than turn it around? And again, using Alinskyism or Ron Heifetz and saying, what's my part in the mess that I find myself in?
Right.
And then what about when we're making decisions? What if we included the humans in the room? Someone's sitting there now going, Barb Otis, where have you been? You are an absolute genius. You've just shared these things, but we just don't seem to step into it. We could go on forever on these things, but I want to ask you this one now. You talk about why feelings and behaviors are the key to keeping great employees. So feelings in the workplace, what are you talking? We can't have feelings in the workplace. We just got to think, not feel. What's your thoughts there?
I love a quote by Dr. Maya Angelou who said, you know, people may not always remember exactly what you said or what you did, but they always remember how you made them feel.
Yep.
That is really, really true. And my over 20 years of doing organizational development work and coaching, people can always tell you how it made them feel, the interaction that they had with someone. And, you know, if you think back, even into your own childhood, your personal life, feelings are very powerful. You can remember, right, something that happened in your childhood that brought up a feeling of happiness or sadness. It stays with you. That's why it's so important. The feeling stays with you. And why wouldn't you want to have happy people, right, where they're feeling excited to come to work in the morning, right? You create the environment where people are self-motivated. People think that this is very hard. It's not very hard. If you ask people, what motivates you?
Yep.
What excites you to come to your job every day? Why do you like doing what you like doing? Is there something that you're doing you don't like to do? I mean, just ask. There's always options.
You also talk about like saying things like, and I want you to talk about this as well, because it's critical, saying things to people like, good morning. And
yeah,
thank you. So
yes,
like two words, four words, but two words in different ways. Why is it so important that we're doing those sorts of things?
Because people feel seen. You talk about respect. That is just the basic respect to give people. And I have to tell you, every single one of the examples that are in the book are true things why people left.
Yep.
I started compiling those when people would come by my office and tell me why they were leaving. And then I just started compiling them all and I put them into a book. I am ready to write part two to this. I mean, I want people to understand it doesn't take something big. It's the small things. It's those powerful moments. And the matter of fact, I just read a book by Dan and Chip Heath called The Power of Moments. Excellent book. And they talk about that whole part about the feeling you get when you have an incredible interaction with someone or customer service experience that you remember how it made you feel. You know, I'm a big proponent. I write notes to my team, you know, or I sit down and write a personal note. If I've had a great interaction with someone, I will sit down and send them a note.
Yep.
Instead of an email.
Yep.
Because it's personal. It evokes that I thought about them. I paused for a moment.
That's great. It's a stop and reflect. And then
yeah,
I have a, when I do my programs in the room, I take in these little A6 called a very human moment thank you card. And I say to people at the start, I give them about three each and I go, on your seat is a little thank you card. When somebody does something in this room that you want to thank them for, stop what we're doing. And then stand up and walk over to the person and share it with them. Now, if the person, sometimes people can get a bit embarrassed with that. So I will ask the question, yeah. If you do get a bit embarrassed with it, let me know now so we won't do it in front of other people.
Yeah.
But what I say to them, don't do this. In the break, I don't want you to go over and slide it underneath their notepad so they find it by surprise later on. Give it to them and look them in the eye and share it, because there's nothing better than when someone knows that that person actually cares about yes. me. They saw something that I did
yeah.
that helped other human beings. And I love how you raise this, because we don't do this because we're looking for the, what's the way to get our engagement score up? You know, we need to mm-hmm. go out and let's go and mm-hmm. do paintball, or let's go and do some sort of team bonding activity. And they're fun, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's not to the essence of what it is to be human, which is be appreciated and be acknowledged. So, yeah. I love it. Now, you just talked about the second book. So,
yeah, I want to start writing that second book.
What would that be about?
Well, I think, you know, I've actually been compiling more and more ways that people are leaving jobs. But what I wanted to say is that something that's happening with this book right now is I didn't write it. I wrote it to retain people, right? people are actually using it to quit their jobs.
Nice.
I got a review on Amazon about a woman who said she dog-eared all the pages that she thought her boss was exhibiting the behavior. And she taped her key to the front of the book with a note that said, "You figure out who quit on your own." I mean, I was just like, I was like, and she said, "Epic way to quit your job," you know? So it's really interesting. I think people who can't have that difficult conversation with their employer or boss, and they're leaving the book on their desk with a note like, "You should read this," or "Your behaviors in this book," you know? And what's great is I love the reviews where people say, "You know what? I saw myself in that book.
Yep.
I did these behaviors. It makes me rethink how I'm going to behave in the future."
You've started a revolution. And I think, which is, you know, it's a good one though. It's a good revolution, because not only for people who have felt like they've been subjected to this type of behavior, but I think more importantly for managers who are prepared to look into the mirror and go, "Yeah. What if it's me?" And in fact, or it is me. And I really love that. Which let's talk quickly then about quiet quitting and the great resignation, the two things that I call them convenient lies to hide the inconvenient truth of what's been going on for decades, is that we've been treating human beings like crap in the workplace for a long time. Yeah. But all of a sudden now, in quiet quitting, it's the employees that are the issue. The bosses are saying they're only doing the bare minimum, in brackets, their job. Or the great resignation is that COVID's created this. For those people who are
they're really good shields to hide behind, aren't they?
Yeah.
Especially quiet quitting. I mean, it's like they put a new term on an age-old problem. It goes back to engagement. Okay, your employees are not engaged, but why aren't they engaged in what they're doing?
Yep.
So, yeah, the great resignation. Well, these are a group of people who've probably been unhappy at their jobs for many, many, many years. And people who maybe are coming into the workforce and people are not staying in jobs they don't like anymore. I applaud that. Like, why should you stay in a job you don't like?
I think it's a great thing to do. And look, you know what? People have been quitting before COVID. It's just been used as a crutch, I think, for it's not my fault. It's the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And the same with quiet quitting is it's not our fault. It's the people that are now sort of working to rule. Well, you know what? Mm-hmm. People, stop trying to get them to do more with less. Stop firing people and then saying to, you know, "Barb, hey, you'll take on 50% of that, but we're not going to give you anything more. And you just go your hardest till we burn you out." And I think these are important things. Hey, this is about simple and practical stuff, not complex and complicated. Given that the world is complicated at times, and humans are, and they're complex and whatnot, like saying things like "thank you" and "good morning" and stuff, pretty simple. Why is it, do you think, if you do think this is my view on the world, that we try and overcomplicate and make stuff complex that's really simple? If you do think that, why is it then, Barb, that human beings try and overcomplicate stuff, do you think?
I think it gives them a sense of power, a sense of, you know, something has to be presented as complex for people to think it's important or it's smart. I mean, I've been in a meeting where I'm sitting listening to someone share something that seems to be very complex, and I'm thinking, am I the only one sitting here thinking this? All you have to do are these three things and we can move the process along? And nobody's speaking up, because it's almost like you're vulnerable if you speak up and say, "Hey," it's almost like you're insulting the other person, right?
Yep.
"Hey, it's only these three things," right? And then I have seen people who've done that, who brought up like, "Hey, it's very simple," and there's silence in the room. It's like nobody knows what to do with it. But I do think also sometimes that comes from a place of insecurity,
yes,
or low self-esteem, or you have to be seen as being very bright, very skilled at what you do. And yeah, I think that we do tend to make things overly complex that are really simple.
and I guess that meeting, the real live meeting, if you go in there and it's one of the people above you in the hierarchy who's making it complicated, yeah. and you go, hang on a minute, why don't we just ask the people? Why don't we stop blaming them? And why don't we include them in decisions? Like you will get stunned silence, and then someone will grab you after the meeting and go, just be a bit careful about what you're saying there, Barb, because you know you're going to piss the boss off. But I think these are the leadership moments that we need to jump into. So let's wrap it up with, where do people connect with you? And the other thing is, like, seriously, everyone needs a copy of this book. Where do they get hold of the book?
Yeah, you can purchase it on Amazon.com. You can also purchase it on my website, which is the www.iquit.net site. You can also get a hold of me through there. People can reach out to me on my LinkedIn profile too. For consulting, coaching, I call this little book, and a friend told me, stop calling it this little book, or it's a little book with a lot of power to it. I say when you do something that resonates emotion in someone, then I think you've done a good job. You've made somebody feel something.
Yep.
And so I'm happy about that feedback, that people read it and it gives them a moment of reflecting and feeling maybe how they've treated other people, or maybe how they've been treated themselves, you know?
Yep.
To heal a little bit. Like, I see it.
So I quit.net. People go in there. The other thing for managers who are listening, who are starting to go, oh shit, I think she's talking about me. Why don't you buy copies for all of your people and sit there with them if you're brave enough and go through the book with them and go, all right, what are the 10 things here that I'm doing at the moment that are making you not feel as good as you should? Hey, I wanted to finish with this. I don't think I've ever told you this before, but your ability to take this message and make it into something that was real, but also in a humorous way, absolutely influenced the way I wrote both of my books.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Because it was just like, this is real. There's no waffle in this. This is real stuff. And now I can understand why, because you took real examples. You took that time and then you made the leadership step to write it in a way that wasn't you. And so I applaud you for that. But I wanted to say thank you, because it really has impacted on me to get out there in the world and say it as I see it, even at times when people don't like that or they may not agree with it. But thank you for your inspiration and thank you for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a complete joy. I mean, complete joy. And I have always respected and I really like your authentic communication. You know, it's not always popular to be a person who speaks authentically, but it's so appreciated.
Thank you.
So thank you for that.
Nat, my pleasure. Thanks for coming on. Hey, I really loved Barb's share about what her grandmother had told her, that she seemed to have this great empathy and care for others. And, you know, we discussed a little bit of that, the power of observing things in others that they can't see. And just think of the impact that's had on Barb's life from those words from her grandmother and where she's ended up, which is, as she says, someone who's an org development practitioner who cares greatly about people and making workplaces places where they want to be rather than places that they want to quit. Those simple and practical tools and tips, you know, ask your people, stop blaming others, and include your people in decision making. And you just might find, and help them to be seen, and you just might find that they don't want to quit and you won't lose them, but you'll actually keep them. I love how Barb was prepared to share a bit of her own poor management practices at times, particularly that one she gave us about how she used to load up the really competent people and, you know, the curse of competence and how that ended in tears for people. And the other side of it was that she wasn't prepared to have the conversations with the slackers, so she just kept loading up the pack horses, as I called them in the podcast. I loved her ideas around simplicity and complexity, that we go for the complexity because there's some power in that. We think we're important. And we don't want to be the person in the room who says, hey, this could be a simple way to do this, and then have to listen for that silence or those crickets, as we call it, while people look at you like you've got two heads. So many other pieces, the value of care for each other, the small things that you do, the good mornings, the hellos, the thank yous. These are all the things that when Barb put together that book, she started to realize that these are the things that weren't being done, the simple human things in the workplace that were resulting in people leaving. And I guess the thing I want to say most about Barb, and she really did inspire me, was that she's written this book, 101 Ways to Lose a Great Employee, in a way that was very foreign to her. She's written it, it's cheeky, there's a bit of fun about it, but it's very real. And I want to really encourage people to get hold of the book. You can go to her website on iquit.net and you can find it there. You can get it on Amazon as well. And you might even, if you're a manager, get copies for your team, get them to read it and have a sit down as a group and say, hey, what are we doing really well that makes sure we don't lose great employees, but what are some of the things we're doing today that we should stop doing? Hey, if you love this one like I did, loved having a chat with Barb again, why not rate it 5 stars? Leave us a little comment on what you loved about it. If you liked it, share it with your friends, share it with your group, share it with your manager, share it with conversations with your team where you can start to talk about, get a copy of that little red book. This is a red book, and just go through it. Have a laugh, but at the same time, have a look back into your mirror and work out that maybe there's some things you're doing that are causing some of your great employees to leave. But until next time, keep it simple, keep it practical, and keep it human. Bye for now.